This is the Horse Radio Network.
This is episode 477 of the Dressage Radio Show on the Horse Radio Network, brought to you by Kentucky Performance Products and Total Saddle Fit. Tonight, we are going to steal an interview that Reese did for the Arabian Horse Racing Radio about retraining a very successful racehorse for a second career in dressage. We also have this year's North American Youth Championships eventing gold medalist, Alex Bro. And as usual, we will bring you a great trainer tip.
Koffler Stanfield from Georgetown, Kentucky.
And this is Philip Parks from Rockwood, Ontario, and you're listening to the Dressage Radio Show. Hi, well, Reese. Welcome back. We're back at it, right?
We're back at it. I love it. Well, you've been very busy showing and doing all the things. So
a lot of coaching was happening last week. Yeah, we had one of our big 4-day shows, and it's very busy, and I'm really tired. But we still have to do the radio show.
Thursday.
We can't
take 2 weeks off. Okay. Exactly. It's Thursday and you're still tired. That's how big of a weekend it was for you.
There's no break in the summer. That's the problem. So
yeah, you guys,
Kentucky, really, how's things down there?
Things are good here. We're we do take a little break in the summer.
Yeah,
it gets so hot here that's kind of how we run our schedule. Is actually in July, when everyone else is really working hard, we are just kind of, I mean, everybody's working, but it's nice when it's not really warm, because usually it's really hot in July and August. So we're going to start ramping back up in the next week or two, so they don't get to vacation too much longer, which is good. But we kind of do shots and that kind of stuff in July, and you know, just that's just how our schedule works, and it works out quite nicely. So, but everything is great, and all the horses are good. Knock on something, and yeah, just rocking and rolling. So you are going to hear a little bit about our adventures at Briarfest. We went to Briarfest actually last weekend with a wonderful horse named Spin Doctor, and you're going to hear a little bit about that because I actually did an interview. It was fun to be on the other side of the chair, I guess. I did an interview for the Arab Racing Show about this horse. You're going to hear a little bit about that. So
Tell us a little bit about Briarfest, because not everybody knows all about this. So
yeah, so Briarfest is a lot of children. I think they have around 20,000 visitors to the horse park for Briarfest. There are a lot of people, and people come from all over. We talked to people literally from California, from Oregon, from Florida. So people come from literally all over. I'm sure there's international countries represented as well, and which is quite fun. And so we did a demo. This Briarfest, I think every year they sort of dedicate it to a certain sport, and this year it was racing. So we happened to get this horse in training for Briarfest actually. And we were able to take him he's going to stay, which is a lot of fun. He's doing really well and the owner's thrilled. So we're going to keep him and show him. So, so it's a lot of people there. I didn't actually go up in the main arena, but there were lots of vendors and lots of people. And then there's all these demos that go on. So you can learn a lot about horses.
Why is it Briarfest? What's the reference there?
I think they sell a lot of Briar horses.
If you don't know what the Briar horses are, the miniatures that they make plastic of actual horses.
It's mostly for
kids, but adults get really involved in it too. And
mm-hmm. Yep.
It's really fun. There's Briar horses of all, and like race horses. Just, I think Velegro has a Briar, doesn't
Velegro, he? I'm not going to lie. I really wanted to go. Lindsay and I really wanted to go get the Velegro, but my niece wanted the painted unicorn. I was like,
oh, nice.
Oh, don't you want Velegro? She's like, no, I want the painted unicorn.
Boring,
and I was
yeah.
like, oh, of course you do. I was like, oh. So, yeah, and they had a painting station. So Addie painted a Briar horse. which is super fun. They had a craft station. So lots of fun stuff. So, you know, obviously I don't have children, so there's a lot of children. it was a lot. But our spin did a wonderful job. He really did. He really held it together when he could have easily not held it together. And he did a great job. So
that's a cool event that they have. Yeah.
It really is a cool event. It's here at the Horse Park every year, I think, in the summer. It's always very hot. But it was fun. So, yeah, it was a good
another reason to visit Kentucky.
And Kentucky, visit, exactly.
Another horsey reason, yeah.
There's always something going on for sure. But this was a lot going on that weekend. At the there was an event that was happening too, so I was coaching there and Briarfest, and yeah, it was a lot, but it was fun. So
tell us, we got some news today, Reese.
Yeah, we did. So the U.S. team
is in that.
Yes, it's hot off the presses. I'm just pulling it up right now. So literally came out this afternoon that they have named the U.S. WEG team. Laura Graves and Verdatis, 16-year-old Dutch warm-blood gelding. She owns with Kurt Mathis. Adrian Lyle and Salvino, owned by Betsy Giuliano, an 11-year-old Hanoverian stallion. Casey Perry Glass. She's from Wellington, Florida, and she rides Gurkegaard's Double, owned by Diane Perry, 15-year-old Danish warmblood, and Stefan Peters and Rosamunda Forwins Farm, 11-year-old Rhinelander mare. So really fun. It's fun to see that they've named the team. And the U.S. riders had a great Aachen last week, so I think they're going to go into the WEG with a lot of confidence, which is really cool. So
yeah, that's fantastic and fantastic results. And I think, yeah, everybody's been stepping up to the plate, and it's going to be a bit of a showdown when we get down there. Yeah. To the WEG. It's not that far away, Reese. We're going to be there.
Can you believe it? So Philip and I are going to be there, and we will come up with a listener meetup. We want to see everybody who's coming for sure. And Glenn will have more information about that as we get a little bit.
Yeah, he's good at setting up that kind of stuff.
Yeah, we are not necessarily, but we're there, and we are really looking forward to it. We're going to actually be there for the entire dressage for, week. I think that's, it's 4 or 5 days. And so I think all our horses are going to enjoy the September vacation. So that'll be a lot of fun. So looking forward to it. So I love it. Well, Phil, we are going to have a commercial break from Kentucky Performance Products, and we're going to come back with Alex Baugh. She is one of my wonderful students, and we had a great result at the North American Young Rider or Youth Championships. She won the gold medal. So I hope you enjoy her talking just a little bit about our horses and how we got her ready for such a big competition.
This Nutrition Minute is brought to you by Kentucky Performance Products, the company that simplifies your search for research-proven nutritional supplements at kppusa.com.
The horse that matters to you matters to Kentucky Performance Products. Managing horses can be challenging. Each horse's personality affects the way he behaves and reacts to the world around him. Horses with certain dispositions can be at higher risk for developing health problems than others. High-strung or excitable horses are easily stressed, but so is the timid, quiet warrior. Stressed horses are more likely to develop digestive upsets that lead to colic, diarrhea, and ulcers. Nalox Advanced was specifically developed to support a digestive tract that is under stress. It sustains proper pH levels, reducing the incidence of ulcers and hindgut imbalances, while simultaneously supporting the healing of damaged tissues. Nalox Advanced supports the complete digestion of starches and sugars and sustains populations of beneficial bacteria. Make life a little easier on your sensitive horse and start him on Nalox Advanced today. To learn more about the ingredients in Nalox Advanced, visit Kentucky Performance Products at kppusa.com.
Well, tonight I am so happy to have back Alex Baugh. She is now the winner of the Young Rider 2-Star Eventing. She just got back from Montana. Alex, welcome back to the show.
Yeah, thank you for having me back.
Well, Alex and I actually just told me right before our interview that we have been working together for about a year, which is super cool because she came to the barn last year with this her wonderful horse. And we started training in dressage, and we had some goals to sort of get to the young riders, didn't we, Alex?
Yeah, we did. We worked really hard at those.
You have been working very hard. So tell us a little bit about, you have two wonderful horses. The horse that you won the gold medal at the Young Riders, Mango. What is, I can never say Mango's fancy name.
Valango and Pizzazz.
Exactly, which is why I can't say it. Exactly. We call him Mango. So tell us a little bit about Mango.
Mango is very opinionated and he's very good at the dressage phase. He really likes doing it, but you have to kind of do it his way. And if you don't, he throws a bit of a tantrum, but we've worked really hard and Reese has really, you've helped me a lot figure out a program that works for him. And we learned that like stretching him before we ride and then slowly collecting him in the canter makes him really happy. And then he does a really beautiful test.
Yeah.
What does the tantrum involve? I'd like to know this. This is what I'm curious about.
He's really bad about his tongue. And so his tongue comes out. And then at his worst, he tries to buck me off quite frequently.
He's got a little sass to him, doesn't he, Alex?
He's a little spicy.
Yeah, we've just seen a few bucks.
There's been some bucking. Yeah, no, it's true. I mean, so Alex, you got Mango 3 years ago? So he was already trained, you know, and had his way of going. And so, you know, obviously for the eventing dressage, you know, I'm lucky enough here in this area in Kentucky, I coach a lot of eventers and I am not under the feeling that it's any different. Eventing dressage is any different than regular dressage. So when Alex told me, you know, she came and said, I want to go come do the 2-star, which is about second level test 3, almost third level. It doesn't have a flying change in it, but it is definitely a difficult test. There are walk pirouettes.
Those eventing tests can be funny patterns. It's not the same. It's the same, but it's not the same. They have these weird things that they have to do. I mean, it's the same movements, but just the way they construct the test is a little bit. I think it's more designed to keep the horses very busy because, you know, like we said, a little bit, the eventing horses can be a little spicy. So they need to be busy all the time, going here, going there. And I think that's reflected in these tests.
We hate them, don't we, Alex?
They're hard.
They're really hard.
Especially the canter, turn, walk. Turn on the haunches canter.
Yeah, that's our nemesis movement, isn't it, Alex? So tell everybody, what is the movement that was the hardest movement? We train this a lot. What was this movement? This is a difficult movement.
The walk pirouettes. We train those nonstop, and we're working on them still. But, like, the 2-star test has a weird movement where you canter and you turn left at E, and then before X, you have to walk past X, do a turn on the haunches left, and then pick up the canter back at X and turn right.
Yeah.
So it's like, it comes up really quick and then they start anticipating it.
It is a very difficult movement. It's really hard to make it look elegant. Kind of that whole test is that way. So it is really important, especially with a horse, you know, like Mango, who is particular about the way he's ridden and the way he goes. And overall, I mean, so Alex, talk us through your warm-up because he is an interesting horse this way. He is definitely not a horse you can sort of get on and just shorten your reins and kick him. So how do we work on that?
Yeah. We usually don't take that much warm-up time collecting him. It's more of like we spend 15, 20 minutes really just stretching him and getting his muscles warmed up and him over his back. We get him round in a stretchy frame. And then when I know at Young Riders, when we were 6 horses out, I started picking up the canter and doing medium canters. And every time I would collect them, I'd shorten my reins just a little bit. And then once he was collected enough or halfway collected, we would start the counter canter and then that would collect him up the rest of the way. And then he really knows his job. So once he's collected, you just do a few movements and then you go into your test. He doesn't need that much warm up because he's so experienced and he knows what he's doing. So really in his warm ups, it's more of just getting his muscles just warmed up. I mean, he knows the rest of it.
Yeah. And really getting the throughness, right? I mean, that's the thing with him is you have to really, we call it creating the bridge from the hind legs to the bit and really keeping him in front of your aids. And it takes a lot of maturity. Alex, how old are you?
I'm 16.
Yeah, she is mature beyond her riding years for sure, because it takes a lot of maturity with a horse like that, because you can't just come out and kick him and pull on this horse. He will not. He'll stick his tongue out and he will be naughty. And you really have to connect him to both reins. And so it takes a lot of maturity, and we've worked a lot on that in the last couple months, on how we do it, and that the program stays the same no matter where we are and what we're doing.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think that took us a while, didn't it, Alex, to kind of figure out what was the key to unlocking this horse's entire sort of mental and physical capability, if you want to say it that way, right?
Yeah. And I think we ran into a few problems too, where he would up a level in fitness for the cross country phases. And we'd almost have to like start over, because the fitter he got, the harder it was to get him through and stretched.
Yeah, no, it's a very good point. It's so true, because this horse, he's a wonderful, wonderful horse, but you know, that's not something a regular dressage rider has to worry about, is like, oh, now I did these gallops, and you're like, oh my gosh, this horse is so fit now. Like, oh, and like Phil said, that the tests keep him really busy, but it's really difficult to make the tests look beautiful, because you're always turning and you're always doing something, which is tough. I also wanted to talk a little bit about, I mean, you drew the first off. You were lucky number one through the whole deal. And you called me and you said, oh, I'm number one. I was like in my head thinking, oh no. But I didn't say that, of course. I said, don't worry, set the bar and set it high, and they have to score you. And that is exactly what happened, wasn't it?
Yeah. And I actually, it's funny, I wasn't supposed to be number one. I was supposed to be the anchor rider for the team and supposed to go in the fourth place slot, which would have been one of the last horses to go. But because you have to ride your team horse first, and I took two of them, there was only three riders in the entire two-star that brought two horses. And that was three out of the four of our riders on our team.
So we all had
to go early. And then Heather, who's an Area 8 rider, who was supposed to be going first originally, had to be our anchor position. So the day before, I think it was Wednesday night, they told me, oh, hey, change of plans, you're going first. Oof. So it was a bit like nerve-wracking, because I'd been like preparing myself to be the anchor rider.
Sure.
And then they told me that I couldn't be. So I think I kind of had to wrap my head around having to go in first with a freshly drug arena.
Yeah, how'd you do that?
I sort of kind of told myself that, like, no matter, like, I'm quite good at my accuracy. Like, it's something that I've kind of, it's been one of my strengths. So I kind of told myself that if you really focus on that, and then it's almost better for Mango to be going first, because there's not as many horses in the warm-up for him to get upset about. So, just having him there, he was the only one in the warm-up for about 10 minutes, and then just kind of focusing on him, and then just going in and kind of doing it. I think that he knew that he was first out, because he's very smart, and I mean, he was getting ridden at 8:30 a.m., but I mean, he's really good about those things, and he knows what he's doing, so I think he went out with a goal to set the bar as well.
I hate going first. There's no pattern in the arena yet, because if you're first, you have to make the pattern.
You have to make the pattern.
And you can't follow the lines. I sometimes will forget my test, and so I just have to kind of look, okay, what's the possible line here to follow?
Phil, you need to talk to Alex about the mental preparation.
I know.
So I think the thing I was most worried about going first was the turn on the haunches, because I always do them the wrong way. So I sat down the night before and like drilled them. And then there ended up not being a test ride before me, because they lost their test rider. They couldn't find any of them. So I think that was some of my scores were a lot different than I feel like they should have been. So that was a bit more stressful as well in warm up.
I bet for sure. No, yeah. I think so. The other really cool thing, in fact, is you led start to finish with no faults after dressage, right?
Yeah.
That's pretty cool. So how did you do that? I mean, this is going into also the psychology of like, you have to go cross country, you have to go stadium jumping. So you went cross country and nailed it, right? You had a great run.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that was really good. He was perfect on that one.
So now we're to the last day, Sunday. I mean, this is a big thing. This is also, you know, you can apply this logic if you're going to the championships and you know, you're going in lucky number one. So how did you kind of handle your nerves for Sunday? What did you do differently or if anything?
Well, for the eventing portion, actually on the last day for stadium, they make everyone go in reverse order of their placing. So Mango ended up being the last one in the arena. And I think they do that so that if the person in second did go double clear and you saw that and you knew that there wasn't a rail between you, it kind of puts the pressure on a bit more. But so I ended up having to ride Elmo first, which was really nice. And it gave me a bit of a test ride almost as to how the course was and how it was riding. And we ended up, I made a bit of an error going into the ABC, so the three jumps in a row, and got there kind of on a half stride. And he stopped at it because I think he saw everything behind him and I gave him a bit of a heart attack, which I feel really bad about because Elmo's the sweetest thing. I know, poor Elmo.
He's a sweetheart.
I think going out on him first kind of set me up for Mango because he's my better jumper. And then what I didn't know is that Heather, my teammate, and I were the only ones in the two-star to finish on our dressage score. So I found out that everyone in the top 10 ended up having a rail or two after my ride on Mango. So riding into that arena, I thought that I had no rails in hand, like I had to go double clear. And then coming around to fence one, I heard the announcer say that she has a rail in hand to take the gold. And I think that took a bit of the pressure off, knowing that even if I messed up at a fence, I was still like good to go. I just couldn't mess up at a second one. But I tried to go into the arena and tell myself that, like, you're not in first, you're in second, and you have someone to catch. So that was kind of my mindset going into it.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's awesome. And you talked briefly, you do have a second horse. His name is Mango, or Mr. Candyman. Tell us, he's a little tricky also on the flat. He's not our easiest one either, is he?
No, he's a bit spooky, which is kind of his downfall. And I think that's what got us a bit at Young Riders, because when they had set up the arena, they had spray painted it orange to know where to put the barriers around it. And they made it a bit wider than the orange spray paint. So when he had did the ring familiarization the day before, he spooked all the flowers and stuff. And then when we went into the actual arena and around it, he was fine because he had already seen it all. And then I think he went down center line and he turned right, and then I think he just kind of saw the orange spray paint and it blew his mind a bit. And I think he got a bit tense. He wouldn't really stop sneezing, but we were able to keep it together. We put in a really nice test, so I was really happy with the way that he handled himself and like kept going, because usually when he freaks out, it's a big mental breakdown. And I think he was able to hold it together a bit, and I wish that it hadn't been the first turn on the test. But I think going into the next shows, I think this one was a big learning opportunity and experience, so that when we go to the next shows, we'll know how to handle them a bit more.
Yeah. And, you know, it is difficult with the horse tense, because he can be fine in the warm-up and then he goes down the center line or around the ring, and it's a whole different ball game, which is hard.
Yeah,
for sure. So it is a little bit tricky.
Yeah, and he was already a bit tense in warm-ups as well.
Was he? Yeah, it was a big trip out there and lots of stuff to do. But, Alex, we're so glad you came back to talk to us. I mean, it was so much fun. I was so nervous. I was nervous all week as they were in Blake Parks. They were all out in Montana, and it just sounded like you guys had an awesome trip and obviously came home with the right color, if I do say so myself. But it was a great experience, and that's what's so cool about the Young Rider program. So, Alex, we thank you so much for coming on the show, and we're having a pizza party for Alex at the barn tomorrow, so we're super excited. I can't wait to hold that gold medal.
Yep. You'll have to wear it for me.
Oh, I'm going to. Don't worry. I'm going to put that baby on. So we'll put that on the Horse Radio Network, on the Dressage Radio Show Facebook page. That'll be fun. So, Alex, thanks so much for coming on. Congratulations again. And I can't wait for the next one.
Yeah, thank you so much, Reese.
Well, Phil, we were talking a little bit about at the beginning of the show, our experience at Briarfest. And so this is actually the interview that I did. So I had the mic on the other hand, if that makes sense. I was being interviewed by the Arab Racing Radio Show, and I hope you enjoy the interview about Spin Doctor.
We're really excited to have with us today a fellow podcaster, a fellow Horse Radio Network podcaster. Reese Koffler Stanfield is here, and you may know her from the Dressage Radio Show. And if you don't, you should go listen to the Dressage Radio Show. And she is here to talk a little bit about Spin Doctor, who, if you aren't familiar with him, he ran a few years ago. He is an ex-racehorse. He was stakes placed on the track, earned over $50,000 for owner Paul and Kathy Smoke. But when he retired from the track, they took him to the dressage ring. And I know, Reese, you didn't get him right off the track. You've just gotten him recently, correct?
Yeah, that's correct. He came about 6 weeks ago from, he had had a break sort of over the winter and came to us to get ready for Briarfest this week.
So today is Friday when we're recording, and you were there today with him. How has he been received there?
He's been great. I will tell you. So actually my assistant, Ashley Rand, has been riding him, and I've been coaching her on the ground. I happen to have been in Germany doing some business, so I just got back myself. So Ashley took him over and got him settled in. And what's really cool, it is an unbelievable environment. I think they're expecting 15,000 people. It is a lot of people. And he really, you know, horses are such amazing creatures. And Spin today moved up several notches. I'm not sure there's a horse in my barn that could have handled that environment like he did. It was amazing.
Nice.
He just, yeah, clued right into Ashley and I. And, you know, I led her around for a while because there were a lot of people. And then, but once we sort of, you know, I got her in the ring and let her go, and he was so good. He could have been so bad, and he was really, really good.
So are there any differences that you've found training Arabians versus other breeds?
Yeah. I mean, I think, again, he's our first one. I don't have a ton of experience with Arabians. I won't lie about that, but I have a lot of experience with Warmbloods and Thoroughbreds here in Lexington. And, right. You know, honestly, he's so smart. I think that's the biggest difference. He's probably one of the smartest horses I've trained. He likes his work. He clues into his people, and he gets the schedule. And from that aspect, he's been phenomenal. So it's, you know, I think every breed has their challenges. You know, just one of the things we're working on with him is just, you know, he had an amazing race career, and just teaching him how to use his body a little differently,
right,
is what we're doing.
Mm-hmm. Have you had very many ex-racehorses?
Yeah, a lot of thoroughbreds. So I probably, of my teaching business, about 75% are thoroughbreds, actually, that are coming from the racetrack and going into the eventing world. So I have had, you know, they also have similar challenges, you know, learning to be supple in their body, and then also learning about the rhythm that we need them to have.
Mm-hmm. And just compared, I know you haven't had Spin Doctor very long, but is there much comparison between him as an Arabian versus the thoroughbreds ex-racehorses that you've had? Any kind of similar differences there?
Well, I think, again, you know, the difference is sort of between a warmblood and a horse that's a racing horse. They're taught to run flat and long, while we want them to be round and short.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
just in their body. So just innately what we're asking them to do is different. So what we do is a lot of suppling exercises and a lot of bending lines to kind of teach them to use their body in a different way. So that's sort of the challenge that we're doing with him. And every horse has, it's just like a human athlete. There are things they do well, and there are things, right, they need to work on. And so I would say overall, just the suppleness in their body is where we focus.
So, yeah, you said you haven't had him all that long. But what is he like around the barn, or what is he like to ride? Does he have
yeah,
any quirks, or is he a fun horse?
No, he's really fun. I mean, he is, you know, because he has a certain, you know, he came from the racetrack far long ago. He was, I think he was been in dressage training about 2 years, 3 years, maybe.
Yeah.
with another trainer. And so our challenge with him was to kind of get him on our side. And I hear that about Arabians, actually. I hear that once they sort of are on your team and on your side, they're, and so I'm not going to lie, we have a jar of cookies by his stall. We're teaching him to be completely woman broke. And I think it's working. Like,
there you go.
Yeah, I'm not going to lie. Like, I think that's super important for him to know, like, I have an amazing team here. And we're actually right now pretty much an all female team. And I think he's getting the idea. He's like, these girls are pretty cool. I like them. Yeah. So we do a lot of, I know that's the, every dressage person is, you know, they feel me. We're cookie training a little bit, but I think that's important. And I live here at the farm. So, you know, every time I go out, you know, and in my jammies, I give him kisses and kind of love on him a little extra so that he learns like we're his people and this is what we're doing. And he's getting the idea now.
Yeah. So. No, Arabians are very much like that. And I'm all for bribery if it works. You know.
I think it's great. I'm all for it, for sure.
So tell us a little bit about the Dressage Radio Show.
Yeah. We want everyone to listen to it as well. So we're once a week, and it is a great show. My fellow co-host is Phil Parks, and he is also a trainer in Canada. So when you listen to the show, you've got two dressage trainers. We're not necessarily radio personalities, but we've been doing this for 6 years, so we have improved a little. But it's a great show, and we have just become the official podcast of the United States Dressage Federation.
That's great.
So that was a really fun thing, and we started some new things. We've got a book club that we just started, so that's quite fun, and everyone can sort of play along if they'd like or read a little bit of each of the books, but we're really enjoying that part, and we get guests, all different aspects of dressage from, I think if you're a beginner rider, you will enjoy it, and even if you're a professional rider, you should get some tips as well, so we try to kind of look at all types and areas of theory to the practical aspect of dressage.
Nice. And you are also on the Horse Radio Network.
That's right. We are.
So how can people find you if they want to learn more?
Absolutely. Well, I've got a Horse Radio email, so you can email me at reese@horseradionetwork.com. And to look up the Dressage Radio Show, you can go to thehorseradionetwork.com and click on the Dressage Radio Show, or you can find it in the App Store as well. So we'd love to have other listeners, and we'll probably have a couple more discussions about Spin Doctor. And if you're at Briarfest, come and see us for sure.
Absolutely. Well, we thank you for chatting with us today, and I will see you tomorrow at
Briarfest. Yes, you tomorrow. I can't wait to meet you.
We can meet in person.
Yes, thanks so much.
Thank you, Reese.
So we have a fantastic trainer tip, a total saddle fit tip of the week, as always. But I don't know about you, Phil, but I have been using my girths and loving the neoprene liner on my Stretch Tech shoulder relief girth.
Well, like I said, last week we were showing, so the neoprene liners got a break the week, and then the leather liners got put on, you know, for the nice show girths, and, you know, you're fantastic.
You don't have to do that. You can show in the neoprene.
You can if you like. I think that the look is a little nicer, and we had to make everything, try and make everything as perfect as we can, but, you know, I tell everybody about the girths. If, you know, somebody comes up and asks, like, oh, that's a little bit different looking girths, you know, you can see them when we hang them up and clean them off at the end of the day. You know, what kind of girth is that? I said, it's the best girth. It's a shoulder relief girth. It's a Stretch Tech girth, too. You know, and I give them a little talk about, you know, how they fit so well and how they're anatomically correct and how the materials are great. And I can't say enough nice things about the Total Relief shoulder girth.
Yeah, they're great. And like I said, we love the liners, that it can be changeable. If you like the look for the horse show of leather, you can do that. And then here in Kentucky, where it's really sweaty, the neoprene is great because we just hose them off. So we love it. So Justin at Total Saddle Fit is amazing. And so you can check out their website, totalsaddlefit.com.
This week's dressage training tip is brought to you by Total Saddle Fit, home of the shoulder relief girth, at totalsaddlefit.com.
Well, Phil, kind of on that note, for our trainer tip of the week, we were going to talk a little bit about you guys just went to a CDI, and talk a little bit about sort of what are the differences of a CDI versus a national show, and how do you decide when to go to a CDI? So I'll let you take it over.
Yeah. So one of my favorite horses just debuted at his first CDI with his owner. And I've been training this horse since he was 3 years old. And it was really, you know, it was one of our goals this year to try to do one. And so we've just been working our way up. Last year, he did fourth level in the national classes, did really well, was going 70s. So we thought, well, we work hard over the winter. Maybe we can bump him up to the national Pre-St. George and I1, the small tour. And, you know, if he's good and he's good enough, then we thought we would take him in the CDI, really support our locals, you know, big show and kind of see how it goes. So, I mean, I think, you know, he exceeded all of our expectations with that plan. The horse has been really, this is a really, really awesome horse. I cannot believe.
Yeah, he's a wonderful horse.
Yeah, how lucky, you know, and with the training and with his personality and, you know, because his owner is an adult amateur and, you know, so I get to do a lot of the training, you know, get him up to teach him. So I've taught him, you know, the threes and twos. And because in fourth level, last year he did fours and threes. And so I sort of bring him up to level and then she takes over and I say, okay, we're ready. We're, you know, to do the pirouettes, to do, you know, all the stuff that happens in the small tour classes. And, you know, he hasn't really missed a beat. I mean, he doesn't try anything. He doesn't try to be bad. He's just a really hard worker and a really super, super horse. And so the decision to enter him in the CDI is a tough one. Mm-hmm. And it depends where you show. I mean, here we have quite a few competitions, you know, high level national competitions where you will be competing. If you enter the open classes, you will be competing against, you know, our team riders, our Olympic riders, you know, because they're out there getting experience. We've got this year we had three CDIs, but, you know, so if you go out there and you enter in an open show, you can kind of gauge about where you would be at if you were, you know, to show in a CDI to kind of get an idea of if you're ready or, you know, what the judging around is. They get that very high level judges, international judges, even to judge the national classes. So we have great opportunities to kind of test the waters out a little bit, before we actually have to enter, you know, one of these big shows, these big classes. So we took him out. He did really well in the Pre-St. George. So in our first show of the season, we just showed him 3 days only to the St. George, scored really well. He actually was judged under Stephen Clark in one of the shows. Yep. I mean, awesome. This was, you know, so this makes a transition really easy because,
yeah,
you know, if you're already competing under Stephen Clark,
right,
then it's, you have an idea. You have an idea what your score will be, mm-hmm. or will be close to, or kind of you can gauge fairly easily what's going to happen if you want to enter a CDI. So I got a very good score under Stephen Clark in the St. George. So the next show we went to, it was maybe 3 weeks later. We just entered him in the I-1 over the weekend, three times in the I-1. It's, you know, keep the pattern simple, you know, keep the idea simple that we're not doing different tests over the different days. And just, we can say this in this weekend, we're going to work on the I-1 and we can kind of tweak it a little bit and see how it rides and, you know, that kind of thing. So we did that a little bit later and he did really well. I mean, not as well. That the I-1 is a much harder test. I mean, we sort of lumped the two together.
Yeah.
You know, small tour. Ooh. But
yeah,
it's a step up to do the I-1 from the St. George. Yeah, the pirouettes are full pirouettes. You have to ride threes and two time changes. Mm-hmm. Instead of fours and threes. So, it, you know, and everything really comes up quickly. The pattern doesn't ride so much like a mirror. So it's a little bit harder to remember. And then you're just doing, like you do about, what is it, five diagonals, six diagonals, and something different like on each one of those diagonals.
Yeah, it's a lot.
Extended canter, threes, twos, and not necessarily in the pattern that you wish they would be ridden in.
Mm-hmm. No, the direction, yeah.
Yeah, so it's very, very tricky test. he went through those that weekend of I-1s, and it was a lot. It was a really hot weekend. It was a lot, but he did pretty good. He did pretty good. And then we sat down, we talked about it. We thought, you know, could we improve him a little bit in between? Could we ride the test a little bit better so that the scores would be a little bit better? And then, so we just thought, you know what? The horse is great. He's sound. He's happy. You know, let's just do it. Let's, you know, support the CDI with another competitor, and, you know, the money goes towards, you know, a pool. And if you want to have CDIs and if you want to have competitions, you have to enter them. Because a year later, when you think, okay, now I'm really ready, they didn't have enough competitors for the year before, and now you don't have the opportunity. So we just thought, let's take the opportunity, let's enter them, let's the next 2 or 3 weeks work as hard as we can to really polish off some of those tests, and we'll see what happens. And so that's what we did.
Awesome.
But it was, I think it's really was all about the opportunity to know what to expect. Mm-hmm. To have these bigger shows to enter that aren't necessarily the CDI competitions. And so you go to a CDI, you have like five judges around the ring, all with their vantage points, and all your mistakes are going to get picked up in this kind of competition. It's another level of pressure. There's, you know, some separate rules about the FEI, you know, and about warm-ups, and right. You have to do the jog, and so it's a lot. It's a lot, you know, and there is a lot of pressure, and you are going to be competing. So we didn't have the opportunity to enter. They didn't hold an amateur multi-tour classes like they, you know, in other bigger CDIs around the country. They might offer those, but they didn't at this one. So my client had to show in the open against top riders, and she was really nervous about it, but we were out there for our own reasons, and that's what I had, you know, that's what we had to focus on. We were doing, you know, we're out there for our own reasons. We're not necessarily going to judge her performance against, you know, what other people were doing. You know, we were out there to gain experience and to figure it all out and to try and have a good time, you know, and see where we're at. With a horse like this, who's just so awesome, we want, you know, to really have
positive,
and really have these bucket list items. She wanted, you know, she wants to be able to say that she's shown against these, you know,
and she did great.
She did amazing. She got a 65 in the St. George and a 65 in the I-1, and that's
that's
exceeded
huge.
Our expectations. We thought that was sort of best case scenario.
Well, and
really,
I think
amazing,
that's true.
Really pulled it out, really held it together.
Really great,
you know,
that's awesome. And it's a lot more pressure. You know, you've got the jog up, you've got, you know, passports, and, you know, you compete for your country. And it really is a whole...
Stewards are serious. It's not, not all, you know, they're really serious about their tack checks, and they're really serious about the barn checks. They have to go through and do barn checks, and their security in the barn. And it's just...
It's just a whole different... It's just a whole different step up. So you really have to be able to say you've shown... and done really well at the national show before you step up. You really want to be in the 70s at the national show. And,
yeah, I mean, it's hard. It's hard to gauge because there's, you know, different shows and who will have different judges, you know, and who may judge easier, maybe harder, or just different. So, like I said, locally here, we're really having the advantage of
that's nice.
You know, the shows they bring in. Really top judges, we know what the scores are going to be. So it's a hard decision if you're from somewhere else in the country that doesn't have that advantage, that you say, well, you know, should I ship, you know, 5 hours to go to a CDI? I think my horse and I are doing really well. That's a really tough call, right?
Well, you know, we're lucky in Florida, there's something like 10 of them.
In Florida, it's the same situation. You know what's going on, right? You gonna know what to expect. But if maybe you're, I don't know, showing in Ohio or, you know, in a different province in Canada, I think you should be expecting to, you know, be able to consistently score quite high because
those
European judges, they're tough, aren't they?
They're tough. They're really tough. They're no joke, really tough. So, for sure.
Yeah,
well,
you're not necessarily going to get a lot of positive comments on your tests, I think.
No.
I mean, there are, you know, things that you can take away, but they really judge like it's professionals that, you know, they're not there to make you feel nice about it. And
apologize for that. There are other venues for that. So
yeah, there's lots of other shows for that, and that have a little bit different expectations of the horses and of the quality of riding, quality of horse. So yeah, you just have to be prepared. I mean, so she got her test back, and there's, you know, five different tests, you know, you go through, and they may not all agree, and you might think, oh, I wish they would like give me more guidance on this score or that, because, you know, stuff is happening very fast and they're just giving scores out, right? They're not adding a ton of comments, or at the bottom of the test, you're not going to get a whole big description on how you did or how to make it better. This, you know, the feedback is a lot less on, you know, why you got a 5 or a 4.
Oh, yeah.
It's just, they're just going to write something real quick and then that's it. Then we move on to the next scoring. Yeah.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It's a little bit different when you do get those tests back, and the feedback level is less. So,
but worth, if you're thinking about a CDI, you know, worth going to a CDI first and seeing sort of how it works and the quality of horses you're going to be up against and the riders and the trainers, for sure. So, well, I love it.
It can be a lot of fun. It can be a lot of fun.
It can be. It's a great goal.
Yeah. You don't need to be winning classes to be competing in these shows. It's just, it's just everything is taken a little more seriously. So
yeah, it's really cool. And if you get a chance just to go see it and see the difference, it's fantastic. Yeah. Well, I love it. Well, as always, we've got some emails and Facebook shout outs. I've got just a shout out to Blake Park. She was also on the One Star Eventing team that I also coach. So I had to give her a shout out as well. So,
oh, nice.
I know. So they're on their way back now. So as always, you can find our show notes and links to today's guests on our website, dressageradio.com. Like us on Facebook, just search Dressage Radio Show. Follow us on Twitter at Horse Radio. My website is maplecrestfarmky.com, and my email is reese@horseradionetwork.com.
The best way to find me is probably on Facebook, or my email is philip@horseradionetwork.com. I'd like to thank our sponsors this week for allowing us to put on a good show. And don't forget to check out all the other shows on the Horse Radio Network at horseradionetwork.com.
Everybody, keep your heels down and your shoulders back, and we'll talk to you next week.